following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Gazette News Group presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me for the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, for the 494th edition of the podcast. They're getting close to that 500 mark. Can't wait. It's going to happen in 2026 in January, so looking forward to that. We have another great show for you. We're going to talk some Union men's hockey as the Garnet Chargers had a mixed bag last weekend. They lost to Princeton 5-1 on Friday night and really did not look good in it. Cameron Corpy struggled and was pulled early in the third period after giving up two quick goals by Princeton, which made it 5-1. But then on Saturday night, and I think a lot of us, including yours truly, were not expecting Union to beat Quinnipiac. But sure enough, the Garnet Chargers did that and took down number eight Bobcats 4-0, the first win in a long time. It was snapped an 11-game winless streak, including 10 straight losses. And just the second time in the program history between Union and Quinnipiac that Union shut out the Bobcats. So it was a great effort. Braden Gillespie was outstanding in goal, made 31 saves. And Tyler Dunbar had himself a game, 2 goals and 2 assists. And now Union gets to wrap up the 2025 portion of their schedule this weekend with a familiar foe from last season, Alaska Fairbanks. 13 months ago, Union did not play well for most of those two-game series that they had with the Nanooks at Mesa Rink. Union had a 3-0 lead in the first game. But the Nanooks scored 3 third-period goals, including 2 with the extra attacker, end up in a 3-3 tie. There was a meaningless shootout afterwards, and Union won that. But that momentum carried over to the next day for Alaska Fairbanks. They scored the first 3 goals of the first period. Really did not get any – Union didn't get any good goaltending. And as Josh Howji mentioned on Wednesday's podcast, they ended up using all 3 goaltenders in that game. It was a 6-4 win for the Nooks. The Nooks have 4 wins this season. They have 3 of them against ECAC hockey teams, Quinnipiac, St. Lawrence, and Clarkson. They also have a tie against Quinnipiac. So it's going to be these games will not be easy. Union looking to build some momentum from their Quinnipiac win and get into the holiday break on a good note. Drew Wemple, who's becoming a regular on this podcast, is back. He'll talk Saratoga Springs football and their appearance in the state class AA championship game last Saturday, a loss to Syracuse CBA. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the story he wrote in Sunday's Gazette about the state of Section 2 basketball and where, you know, how some of the top players are leaving high school to go to prep schools and try to get more exposure that way. And he'll have an update for us on the high school hockey situation between Section 2 officials and Section 2. I'll tease it right now. Not good. So it's ugly. And then Ken Fang, a good friend from Awful Announcing, joins me. We'll talk the latest sports media news and always enjoys talking with Ken. We always have a good time. And he gives us a lot of information on what's going on in the sports media scene. So that'll be coming up later. So up next, we're going to talk Union men's hockey here on the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi. This is Daily Gazette News Group sports reporter Drew Wemple. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
Man, I loved playing high school sports growing up. And it's fun being a fan now, don't get me wrong, but sitting in the stands feels like I'm missing out on all the action, you know? I wanted to get back in the game, so I signed up to be a high school official. It takes me back to my playing days. I'm supporting students, and I get paid to make the big calls. Do you want to see the game up close? Sign up to become an official in New York at highschoolofficials.com.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group Executive Sports Editor Will Springsteen. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2026.
Welcome back to the podcast. As I mentioned in the open, the Union men's hockey team is back in action this weekend to play Alaska Fairbanks for a couple of games, and Friday's game starts at 7 o'clock, and then the Saturday rematch is at 5. A couple of things going on with the Saturday game. It's the annual toy drive that Union Men's Hockey holds, and something also going on. It's the first teddy bear toss. So if you've seen videos over the years of teams throwing bears onto the ice and stuff, toys on the ice when your home team scores, the Hershey Bears, the team I used to cover back in the 1980s, they have really become famous for it. They've set records for the most bears. I think over 7,000 one year. I don't expect 7,000 at Saturday's game, but it'd be nice to see fans participate. And Union gets a goal early enough where you don't have to worry about whether they're going to be able to throw it or not. But they do have a provision, as if Union does not score by the third period media timeout, then during that media timeout, that's when they'll throw the Bears. But I think the Carolina Chargers are looking to do that, get that taken care of in the first period. As I mentioned, of course, last year the two teams met at Messer Rink, and it wasn't good for Union. Dropped Union and Alaska Fairbanks played to a 3-3 tie in a game that Union had a 3-0 lead and wasted it. A couple of extra attacker goals late sent that game into overtime. There was a meaningless shootout that Union won. But the momentum of that rally carried over for the Nanooks on Saturday, and they scored the first three goals in the opening period and ended up with a 6-4 victory. And, of course, as I said, they've beaten three ECAC hockey teams this year in Quinnipiac, Clarkson and St. Lawrence. So this is going to be a tough matchup. And, of course, with the holiday break coming up, you got to wonder if the players are thinking about getting away for a couple weeks. The Union won't be back in action until after the new year. But I think their focus after what they did against Quinnipiac, they're not going to lose that focus. They want to go into the break with some momentum. Tuesday was the usual media availability. And on the dais were defenseman Nick Young, forward Brandon Burr, and defenseman Tyler Dunbar.
Well, for you guys, Alaska Fairbanks, you played them last year twice. You lost the lead in the first period, ended up being a tie with shootout win, and lost game game two on that Saturday. So, Nick, how important are these two games, remembering what happened last year?
No, it's extremely important. I think that the guys that were there remembered kind of that feeling, and our last weekend before break, it's important to, it's not ECAC games, but we're still trying to make a statement nationwide, so they're extremely important.
Brandon?
Yeah, getting revenge for last year, obviously. That first game was tough that we dropped, so just coming back this year and getting two games is what we want to do.
How important is it to build off the momentum of what you guys did on Saturday against Quinnipiac?
Oh, it's very important. That's a very big win for us. Obviously, the Friday before, it's unacceptable losing to Princeton like that. But coming back, beating QPAC, just keeping that momentum going is going to be big for us to carry over to Alaska.
Tyler, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with everything they said. Obviously, I heard a lot about the Alaska games from last year in the room and just kind of how we're going to look to build off the momentum from Saturday, but still kind of not forget that feeling from Friday.
Just going down the line, how much after what happened on Friday does Saturday's win, kind of boost confidence? Obviously, you have a good start to the season, or where you are now, but just with the starting conference play Friday night, and then how much does it boost on Saturday to get a win over a team like that?
Yeah, I mean, it really felt good to beat them, especially for guys who've been here a while and haven't beat them at all in our career. That was something that really meant a lot. And obviously, like they said too, we wanted to get Friday, but going out, you have to get Saturday, have to beat QPAC, and we did that. So I think that's good to have our confidence going into this weekend. We can't get too high on ourselves. We can't get too inflated or deflated like a balloon. You got to be right there, perfect. So we just want to keep that confidence, roll it into this weekend, and get two games.
Yeah, obviously Princeton wasn't great, but beating QPAC was big. Like, I know in the past, or at least me and Younger, we've had more of that prey mindset going in there, but I think last game against them showed more of a predator mindset, and it really helped us and showed it.
Yeah, I agree. I think Friday night obviously wasn't what we wanted. Maybe going there, gripping the shaft or stick a little too tight, just things like that. Like, it's kind of tough to manage, but I think the response that we had on Saturday was really big for our team, and we just have to continue to build off that as the season goes along.
Going down the line, start with Tyler. Also, these are the last two games of 2025. How obviously guys are probably looking forward to getting home and spending some time with the family before getting back to play in January. So how important is it to not be distracted by coming up, this break coming up, and keep you focused on the games?
Yeah, it's for sure important. I think we've got a pretty strong mindset in the room. Kind of the focus is, you know, is on these two games. You don't really talk about things like break until it happens. So first and foremost, we're kind of looking to, you know, take this sweep this weekend and then work from there.
Brandon?
Yeah, we just can't look ahead to break. We got to focus on these two games. They're what's important now, and we can enjoy our break after.
Nick?
Yeah, I mean, there's a job that we have to do, and we all know that every single weekend. So I don't really think anyone's looking ahead. Like, we're in the moment. We're here, and we're here to take care of two games.
Tyler, for you, you had 31 games at Colorado College. You had a goal and an assist in those 31 games. Where does this offensive explosion come from this year? You had 7 goals, 12 assists. Tied with Brandon for the team leading scoring.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think it was always there. I'm just very grateful to be here now and, you know, have an opportunity to, you know, showcase what I feel like I had all along, and I couldn't be more appreciative for the opportunity I was given here, you know, the guys around me and the coaching staff as well.
What happened at Colorado College? Was this a matter of not getting enough playing time, or, you know, what was the situation there?
You know, I think it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, looking back, you can't quite figure out why it didn't work out, but, you know, I'm very happy with how I was able to end up here and, you know, able to find the group of guys like we have here that, you know, are able to play a way that really gels with my game as much as, you know, mine gels with theirs.
How much has your confidence grown in the first half of the season the way you have been playing?
I think it's definitely grown. You know, I think kind of one of the tough things about, you know, being in a situation like that at Colorado College is continuing that internal belief, which is something that I believe that I was able to do while staying there. So, you know, I like to think that the confidence has been there all along, but, you know, the results are kind of showing now, which is, you know, nice as well.
When you entered the portal, I mean, what fit were you looking for in a school, and how did Union become that fit?
You know, I wasn't really sure what I was looking for when I entered the portal, and the first phone call I got when I entered was Josh Howji. So, you know, kind of talking to him and seeing, like, you know, his vision of the team and where he thought that I could fit into that was definitely something that I fully could get behind. And I think, you know, after that, the decision became kind of easy.
Give me the playing time he has. I mean, how much appreciative are you of that?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, will forever be grateful for the opportunity to be here and, you know, to be a Garnet Charger. So, I can't thank him. I can't thank the players enough. It's really exciting to be here, especially during this time.
And you played with Coach Janella, right? Did that factor in your decision, that knowing he was here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I had a relationship with Z in Lincoln. He was my D coach there as well. So I got traded kind of at the halfway point of my final season, where I was, you know, able to become a star, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It was an awesome experience, and, you know, I had an amazing time there, and Z was super helpful for me the entire time, made the transition easy, and it was definitely nice to see a familiar face on the coaching staff when I was, you know, searching through the portal.
I'll ask you, Brandon, and Nick, I'll ask you, what about Tyler's performance this season?
I mean, it's all right. Obviously, it's been exceptional for us. I mean, 19 points as a defenseman, some of it is insane as it is. So, obviously, picking up has helped us a lot, and I'm sure Nick will attest to that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, the play speaks for itself, but for me, it's, like, his character and the person he is. Like, the amount of value he adds to our culture and our team is probably more important than what he does on the ice. But, obviously, like, what he does on the ice is unbelievably helpful, and, you know, he's just a great teammate that we're super happy to have.
Coming up, Drew Wemple, our Gazette High School sports writer, will talk about a variety of topics, including Saratoga Springs football season and in the Class AA championship game last Saturday, a loss to CBA Syracuse. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group's Schenectady County reporter, Erica Baska. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
It's the most historic conference in college hockey. It's a battle night in and night out. ECAC hockey, an iconic conference home to 12 of the most prestigious universities and programs in the world, and showcasing the best student athletes in the sport. Top-notch facilities and arenas, incomparable traditions, passionate fans, alumni who go on to become elite professionals, leaders, and champions. ECAC hockey, there's no experience like it.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette Newsgroup reporter Chad Arnold. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2026.
Welcome back to the podcast. Drew Wemple, our high school writer at the Gazette, joining us again, and we'll talk Saratoga Springs football to start. Tough ending of the season. They got to the championship game of the Class A state tournament, but they ran into a bustle in CBA Syracuse, 41-12 victory for CBA Syracuse. How would you assess the performance of Saratoga Springs? I mean, it wasn't, I mean, it's, the score, it could determine maybe it was a blowout, but was it closer than the score?
No, it really wasn't. And thanks for having me on to kind of wrap up the end of the fall season officially.
Yeah, because all the snow we have, we're taping this Wednesday, it doesn't feel like fall anymore.
You can tell we're in the winter now, yeah. But with this game, Saratoga, you could tell the environment at first in the atmosphere and the stakes and the team they were playing. It got to them in that first half. They were down 21-0 early. They had a couple bad possessions toward the end of that first half, some missed opportunities. But then at halftime, after halftime, they came out and looked like a different group, a group that was unfazed and that they were supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. They cut that game to 21-12 in early in the fourth quarter. They scored on back-to-back drives to start the second half, really shut down that CBA defense to start. And they went for two with a chance to cut it to a one-possession game, which for a CBA Syracuse team that has won 40 straight coming into this, they had them on the ropes. It was clear that they were doing some things that CBA Syracuse had to adjust to in that second half. The final score was really just a product of CBA kind of pulling away late. They scored a pick six within the last minute. They scored on a late rushing touchdown where they kind of had to score as opposed to being able to kneel out the clock with, you know, the down and distance situation and everything. So Saratoga was squarely in that game pretty much all the way through until that last minute, which for a team that hasn't been there in 10 years and is only there for the second time, that's a really big accomplishment for them.
What was the take from the team, from the head coach afterwards? I mean, obviously sad that they lost, but let's face it, who expected them after they lost to Shenandoah in the regular season the way they did, blowing that lead? They went on a run. I mean, it was an incredible run to get to Syracuse, and I mean, yes, as I said, sad that they lost, but they had to be happy the fact they got there.
Yeah, to your point, I think the only people that thought they would be there was themselves. They had that internal belief. So I think the fact that they did get there and they left it all on the field for four quarters, I think, you know, it left that team pretty uplifted. I mean, that moment's going to be tough for a high school kid and a team full of, you know, coaches that put so much time, hour, and energy into getting to this spot. So it's going to sting in the moment, but you could tell right away that Coach Hayden wanted heads held high, and the team really followed that message. They knew that they did something that really was just unforeseen coming into this season and kind of defied the odds. So it was a season to be proud of and really a day to be proud of. When they had that send-off on Saturday morning, there was probably close to 50 to 100 people just lined up in the frigid cold just to watch these kids walk 20 feet from the school to the bus. I mean, that's how much this whole run meant to the community and to the team. So I think they had a lot to be proud of, and they knew it on that night.
How does this help them towards next year? Obviously, there are going to be some losses to graduation. I mean, how does this help them in Section 2 play, especially when you still know that CBA is the cream of the crop in Class AA here? And Shen, too. You have to factor Shen in, too.
Yeah. I mean, they lost 20 seniors. The big ones are going to be up front on the line, and obviously Ben Corrier at running back with leading the state this year. I mean, those groupings were terrific for them this season. So you lose 20 seniors, but by having a run like this, all those returners now have that belief. And they have that experience, which was something that we talked about in the lead-up to that game, they didn't have coming into this season. You know, they didn't have experience playing for a sectional title, didn't have experience in the regionals and semifinals and state championships. So you get all that, plus you've got a lot of returners at key positions. Bobby Morris is coming back for his senior season at quarterback. Cam Tooney's coming in as only a junior, three-year starter. He's got offers from Penn State and Syracuse already in hand. He's a freak on offense and defense. He showed that this season. You've got talent at the wide receiver positions with LaFrance and Jaden Lockrow coming back. Talent on defense coming back. They played a lot of JV guys during this playoff run because of the flu they were dealing with and injuries. So just the experience is going to be such a valuable piece for them to have. And I think if we're talking today towards next season, they've got to be either one or two as the favorite to come out of Section 2 for Class AA.
How many of those guys, kids have to play basketball now?
Yeah, Bobby Morris is one of those kids. He talked about it. They're going right into the basketball season. They're fresh off it. I know a bunch of CBA guys from last year's team did that, and after the way they lost, that was just motivation for them right away. So it's a hard turnaround, but these kids are the right kind of athlete to do it.
Well, I segue into basketball because you had an article in Sunday's Daily Gazette. It's online at dailygazette.com. It seems like Section 2 basketball is in a little bit of a crisis here with some key players leaving to go to prep school. An example, Daniel Smalls, in this Unistar, is transferred to Albany Academy to play. He says, a quote you have from him said, the best players in the section want to play at the next level, where you're going to play against the best players from other sections, some of the best players from the state, or even some of the best players in the country. I mean, is this an indictment on Section 2 basketball that's maybe not, college basketball recruiters are not looking at that? They rather look at them playing in the prep schools like Albany Academy?
Yeah, and I like that you use that quote, because with a situation like this where you've got, you know, every kid is different, every team makes a different decision, you know, for their circumstance. But this kind of seemed like the common thread that pushed this whole thing, you know, will push this whole movement along, is, you know, guys want to do what's going to be best for them in the long term. At the end of the day, you do have to look out as a high school student for what's going to set you up the best for success. Is that, in the case of like Bernox Westerloo, is that playing a WAC schedule where you might beat most teams by 50 points every night? Is that the best for them, you know, for their kids long term, and, you know, for them right away to get ready for the postseason? With, you know, individual kids, I've also heard that a lot of the times, you know, they don't quit locations or they don't quit teams. They kind of, you know, quit people, I guess, for lack of a better term. So, but, you know, every kid is going to have a different decision, a different person that, you know, helps guide them in their life. So that's a tough thread to pull on. Whereas when you find out that, you know, some kids, as opposed to playing weaker competition every other night, they could go play a schedule twice as large. They'll play a lot more games, and against nationally ranked and notable competition. I mean, that, when you look at it that simply, the decision does kind of seem almost obvious, but it's a sensitive situation when you're dealing with active high school student athletes, and everyone has the right to make the decision that's best for them.
Yeah, and Will Ferguson, who's the boys basketball coordinator for Section 2, said the player has to do what he thinks is the best avenue for him. I don't always think that may be the best avenue. I think Section 2 is highly regarded for basketball. And, you know, we've seen, you know, I think this guy got to the championship game last year.
We saw a lot of success this year.
Shaker won a state title. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do these schools have to do to keep these kids here and not go to that prep school level? And the other thing is, just because you have success at the high school level, that doesn't usually that may not translate to a much tougher prep school.
No, it doesn't always, and it might not always then translate to the college level or the pros. And, you know, I think kids have to figure that out. But when you mention success, and this was another thing that Ferguson mentioned with me, as well as Steve Grandin from the Sports Writers Association, is these last couple of years in Section 2 have been very favorable for boys basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think when we look at, you know, eight or nine, you know, really notable guys that transferred out this year, a lot of the, you know, some of them were from those teams. They enjoyed in some of that success. And nobody, you know, none, especially not us, we're not going to root against that kind of success. That's great business. That's, you know, really good for those programs to reach those heights, and we've been hitting some pretty good heights over the last couple of years. So is that normal? Is that trend going to continue? This is Ferguson's point is, you know, as we have some weaker years, are we going to, is that going to reflect in the amount of transfers out, which I think is very fair.
Yeah. I mean, let me give you the list that was in the Gazette besides Smalls. Antonio Fairley went from Canjo to Albany Academy. Jack Donahue from CBA to Newman School in Massachusetts. Davon Maloney from LaSalle to Newman School. Treddy Faison from LaSalle. I'm sorry. I can't read my own writing here. He went from LaSalle to the Winchendon School. Yeah, thank you. In Massachusetts. Stetson Merritt, Troy to New Hampton in New Hampshire. Samir Robertson from Catholic Central to Cathedral Catholic in California.
We're going out there.
Oh, boy. And then another West Coaster, Samaje, is that how it's pronounced?
Samaje.
Yep. Samaje Kyler from North Warren to Bella Vista in Arizona. That's the other thing. Obviously, you know, we mentioned Smalls and Fairley, and they stay local, but these other kids going out of state. I mean, and there's a possibility they get homesick.
You could find opportunities are near and far. And I think with the NEPSAC, which was, you know, a league that I kind of focused on, because I think that takes a lot of prevalence in this area. We have three or four NEPSAC schools right in our own backyard. I mean, that opportunity to stay home and play at a national level is right here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can do that within a 50 square mile radius. And with that list of names, I've gotten to know, you know, almost all of those kids covering them over the last couple of years. And like I mentioned earlier, each one of their situations is unique. It's always going to be unique. But they're all great kids, both on and off the court. So we wish them luck at the next level. Yeah. It just is, you know, when you think about what these kids have accomplished, it's very interesting to look at why they're now leaving Section 2, especially with some of those schools you've listed where they're coming from. Those are good basketball programs. Mm-hmm. They're now transitioning out of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any bitterness among the coaches, among the teammates. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen there. But, you like to see these kids stay at their high schools because they're from that neck of the woods, and they, you know, grew up, you know, playing together, and then to leave like that, I think it's tough. And of course, I deal with college hockey. Mm-hmm. The high school hockey here, no college recruiters are coming to see these kids play. Let's be honest. You know, the high school hockey is good, but it's not where you get to the prep level where you're going to get, you know, the college recruits, and then that's a whole different sport and a different matter. But obviously, you know, basketball is good around here. There's no doubt about that. I mean, just to see, I mean, you wonder, I don't know how much does the AAU scene play a role in this as well?
AAU absolutely plays a factor. And that's another thing where kids are, you know, viewing what's the best environment for them to succeed. They'll go play summer ball, whether it's, you know, Albany City Rocks, which is probably the cream of the crop around here, or some of these other grassroots programs. And they'll get put in that environment of playing against national competition, doing it, you know, on a, you know, pretty heavy grind as opposed to just a scholastic season. So AAU is definitely kind of, I think, a proving ground where kids can kind of feel out if this decision is going to be what's best for them. And for me, you know, writing this story, obviously seeing the names that transfer was kind of the first light that said, okay, maybe this is something worth digging into. But another thing is, I come from, you know, growing up watching, I played against Joe Girard at Glens Falls. I used to watch, you know, Kevin Herter pack out those gyms at Shenandoah. I remember hearing about Joe Cremo and those Scotia teams right down the road and the success that they were having when I was at Burnt Hill. So, I mean, this idea of kind of the small school, not so much Shenandoah, but, you know, these local legends starting local and then getting to, you know, kind of, we have that affinity towards them because they came from our area and did it in our area. Yeah. That's where their story started. So it's now kind of at a point almost, I think, where season to season, who could be the next talent that maybe hits that kind of rise and, you know, starts that journey as opposed to then says, okay, I've had a good couple of years, let's take this jump to the prep school.
What was it like playing and defending? Did you have to defend Girard?
No, I was a bench warmer in high school. That's why I write about sports as opposed to playing them. But we played him in a summer league, I remember, at Skidmore College. And I just remember the buzz on our team, you know, just getting to play him. It was like, wow, this is something. And, you know, I'm sure kids have that still to this day when they get to play some of these big schools and some of these top, you know, notable talents from team to team. You like playing the best, you know, everybody, and getting the chance to beat the best. So is that trend, you know, are we seeing those days kind of go by the wayside is more what I wanted to peel into with this.
Yeah, I mean obviously, you know, also Jimmy Fredette too. I mean, just what he did. I mean, just thank goodness he didn't go to the roof prep school route, because, I mean, just they filled the buildings up there when they had the state tournament in Glens Falls, when it's called the Glens Falls Civic Center. Now it's Harding Mazzotti Arena. But
And there are other cases. Like, you look back, you see, you know, Mark Lyons at Schenectady. He took that jump to Brewster. That was around the turn of the century. And, you know, even more recently, Andrew Playtech from Niskayuna. He was one of Smalls' mentors. He took that jump, you know, went prep, you know, before going to UNC and then Siena. So it's really kind of to each their own, I guess. But is it, you know, the saying of if they're good, they'll find you. Has that changed? Has that changed over the years and, you know, where we are now?
Drew, can you give us an update on the hockey situation with Section 2 and the officials? I mean, it seems like things aren't getting any better.
No, and mediation took place today at around 3.
Well, we should say, before you say that, we should tell people we're taping this on Wednesday. So
yes. Yes, so mediation with the State Athletic Association with NISFA took place today at around 3 p.m., and they didn't get out until a little before 7, so almost 4 hours, and there was nothing to show for it. I spoke to both the ENY NIHOA representative as well as Dr. Robert Zayas, the executive director of NISFA, and the disappointment is evident. They could not come to an agreement. As it stands now, ENY NIHOA has basically dropped its original offer that was on the table for Section 2 to pay them $15 extra per official per game on the contingency plan that a third-party government agency, be it the State Education Department or the State Comptroller, ruled in their favor on the validity or invalidity, rather, of the officials' agreement that was signed this past summer, which is where this whole dispute has stemmed from. We've gone over some of that before. It's dark and it gets deep in there. So they have basically upped the offer and have dropped the entire contingency plan. They now want $16 per official per game, which would bring it up to almost $140, an even total of $140 per official per game. And that's firm from what I'm hearing from their side of the fence. And it's only going to go up from here as the situation gets dragged on, and there was no solution that the sides could come to tonight.
Where do we stand now as far as games? I mean, are we going to see games canceled, or are they going to bring other officials from outside the area in?
Yeah, so for this weekend, there's going to be 3 games that have officials from Section 3 coming in to officiate the games. Now, they operate in crews of 3 officials per game, whereas Section 2 and ENY NIHOA only requires 2 officials per game. So that's an extra official. And they're estimating the cost with travel, per diem, on top of the just regular wage for an official for a game, is going to be somewhere between $700 and $1,000. And that's for each one of these games. So what I'm hearing from, you know, the Officials Association after they get this news is, you know, now they're wondering if the money's going there, why can't it come to us? But I think for the other side of things, for Section 2 and the State Association, they don't want to open this can of worms of renegotiating with every single officials organization, because from what Zay has told me, there's over 250 of them in the state. That's a lot of negotiating to have to do if you bend to one and you don't want to do that to all the others, because that's realistically where this could head if that's the direction Section 2 in the state decide to go.
I mean, are we at a point now where we're going to see more and more games canceled? It seems like if you bring these outside officials in, it's going to cost more and more money, and it's come to the point where maybe they can't afford to do it.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing, the, you know, kind of direct next step from NISFA side of things, because they're now fully involved and they're the overarching governance, you know, on Section 2 and, you know, their officials. So what I'm hearing they're going to do is they're going to take it to their federation of officials, which ENY and IHOA, I was told, is not a part of. And they will make the ruling on whether to say that, you know, these officials are withholding services from your section, so you have the right to go now hire some outside officials and bring them in. I don't know what the dollars and cents of that are going to be yet. I mean, that has yet to be calculated. That meeting, Zay has told me, isn't going to be until next Wednesday. So I don't know who the negotiating is going to be with now, because it doesn't see, you know, I'm hearing ENY and HOA is still sitting at the table ready to negotiate this new offer they have, whereas Section 2 and the State Association don't want to go down that avenue right now.
Well, I know you'll keep us abreast of the situation, and as we head into the holiday, we'll obviously maybe talk about that after that. Maybe hopefully between now and then Christmas, there's something, a compromise comes together and they can, you know, sing kumbaya and then get on their way to play officiating games.
I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, Drew, appreciate a few minutes, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
That's Drew Wemple. Coming up, we're going to talk with Awful Announcing's Ken Fang on a variety of sports media topics. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group pint size columnist John Norris. I'd like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
How can you measure the value of education-based athletics? Well, the value is in what makes it invaluable. That's because school sports aren't just about winning. They're about learning and growing. School sports aren't just about gaining trophies and accolades. They're about learning life lessons, bringing a whole community together, developing character and integrity, having coaches who mentor you and teammates who become lifelong friends. And you can't put a price on any of that. That's what makes education-based athletics invaluable. Of course, when you participate in school sports, you want to win and become a better athlete. But the purpose is so much greater: becoming a better person. Support your local school sports programs. And if you have a student, encourage them to get involved.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group Deputy Online Editor Gino Dimenich. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2026.
Welcome back to the podcast. We always love talking sports media with our friend Ken Fang from Awful Announcing, and Ken's kind enough to join us for a few minutes here. And how are things going, Ken?
Good, Ken. How are you?
I'm hanging in. Can't complain. It's as we tape here on the Tuesday night, it's cold as hell.
Yes. Very cold in Rhode Island too.
Yeah, because it's so cold I can't walk Harper out on these walks. So it's basically, you know, to put on a deck to do her business.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, the big story recently was the new media deal with Major League Baseball, with NBC, Netflix, and ESPN totaling $800 million. Seems like NBC is going to spend Sunday nights with sports and forgetting about scripted shows anymore.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see how NBC's strategy is. Content is king. Apparently, it's deciding to go with an all-sports strategy all year round with Sunday nights, whether it's baseball, the NBA, which will be happening in January, actually in February, and then there also, of course, Sunday Night Football. So it's all year round. Are they going to be a killer on the ratings or for everything? Probably not. But it's a way for them to stick out, in especially in summer months when there is a lack of content. So kudos for NBC to thinking out of the box, definitely in this way. We also seen Fox with the go with more live sports as well. So let's see how it works. This is a very short contract. It's going to be about 3 years or so. And it takes over for ESPN, which has decided to opt out of its contract for Major League Baseball. So we'll see how this works, and will it lead for more baseball for NBC, which was the original TV network for baseball, all going back to the 1950s, and then you know, interrupted. So we'll see how this works.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to the days of Kirk Gowdy, Tony Kubek, then later Joe Garagiola and Tony Kubek, and I mean, remember back in those days when they had the postseason, they would bring on the local announcers. Of course, you remember Dick Stockton famously calling Carlton Fisk's home run in Game 6 of the 1975 World Series. So it's sort of, you know, for my generation, brings back that kind of, you know, the baseball game of the week when it was special, when you didn't have cable, and the only way you got to see a game nationally was on Saturday afternoons on NBC.
Yeah, I think that's something for me. And you can something very special to think about, especially back to nostalgia in those days. And of course, NBC is tapping into nostalgia with the NBA. But we'll see how they decide to do this with Major League Baseball. There'll be a lot of older fans that will definitely remember that. Definitely some younger fans who don't. So it'll see. It'll be interesting to see how they approach baseball. At one time, as you mentioned, they had some of the best announcers. You mentioned Bob Costas came up through with them. Vin Scully ended baseball, the original run of in 1989, calling games with Joe Garagiola on the game of the week. So it's going to be interesting to see who they get. You know, they have a ton of people who they could tap, whether it's Jason Benetti, who called games with them on Peacock when NBC had the Sunday morning contract a couple of years ago. So there's some people that they can tap. I'd love to see who they'd be able to get. You know, they don't necessarily have to go with older announcers. They can get some of the younger generation and perhaps, you know, get their imprint back on baseball the way they used to be.
I can't imagine Mike Tirico wanting to do play-by-play for that in NBA and the NFL.
No, I don't think he's known for baseball either. I'm sure he could call it pretty well. I know that he's done some minor league games when he was working in Syracuse and as a Syracuse grad, but I don't think that he would be painted as a top broadcaster for baseball, although it'd be interesting to see how he could do that. But again, we'll see who they tap. They've got a couple of months to do so, and it'd be great to see who they get.
Netflix gets the Home Run Derby and then two additional games. What's the benefit of just getting two additional games besides the Home Run Derby for Netflix?
Well, I think for them, it's part of a strategy of getting big events. Of course, they have the Christmas Day NFL doubleheader. They have Monday Night Raw for WWE, some boxing. So I think for them, they just want to say, hey, look, this is what we have. I think they also are going to get a couple of like opening season games, if I'm not mistaken. But for Netflix, they just want to get something that you can go to them for one time and one time only. They know that they're there, that you're not necessarily looking for them for sports, but if they're going to get something, we're going to bring you for eyeballs for something special that you're going to see once. And then if you're going to come to us, sample us for other programming, whether it's movies, whether it's streaming, whether it's, you know, regular series, you know, Hunting Wives, you know, they have a whole bunch of other things, and maybe even Warner Brothers library down the road.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that down the road. But Netflix is it's known as a brand name, not necessarily for sports, but at the same time, they'll say, hey, look, we're not going to be a regular rights holder, but we're just going to give you something that you want to see. And come back for, and they, you know, they're good at that. So we can see how they can treat baseball, and it's going to be good for them to maybe get some shoulder programming like documentaries. They already have stuff like on the Boston Red Sox and the like down the road. So we'll see if this brings in some other programming, shoulder programming that they can promote to help baseball.
Well, ESPN had Sunday Night Baseball for years and years. They're going to still be involved, but if they have, what I think, believe 30 games they're going to show during the season, but no postseason. But I think the big thing out of this, which I don't think really been talked about now, they get the rights holder for MLB.TV, which is going to be available on the ESPN app. I mean, how big is that?
That's huge. First of all, ESPN is trying to get known instead of just not just for TV, but they want to get you to be hooked as a for everything. So whether you read them for Adam Schefter's, scoops online, whether it's on their app, or whether it's on X, or whether it's getting you to see their, this is why they have the new ESPN Unlimited app, which they launched earlier this year, back in September. So now they're getting all the entire MLB.TV. I mean, this was they originally got their platform is originally from what MLB BAM Tech. So, mm-hmm. I'm going to get totally technical on you because your hair is going to hurt.
I don't have hair, so don't worry about it.
No, exactly, but. It's funny because, it's kind of full circle. So they got their technology from Major League Baseball, which was an innovator in the streaming world and the streaming platform with the original platform to get MLB.TV. Now they get the entire thing, the entire enchilada. So this way they get local rights, and it's something that Major League Baseball, they know it can be pretty expensive, but now ESPN now has local rights, including the San Diego Padres. They also have local rights with, I believe, not Minnesota, but they Minnesota. Yeah, they have a whole bunch of rights. So this way they can have it all in their umbrella and just say, hey, look, come over to ESPN, our app, and not only that, watch other programming. So it's all about sampling. It's all about content. And ESPN wants you to not know it just for TV, but know it for everything.
What can we do to get the blackouts lifted? Because when the Phillies play the New York teams, I can't see them on like the NHL package. I still have ESPN Plus, so I get for the college hockey. So obviously I get all the other benefits from that. But mm-hmm. not be able to see my Philadelphia teams because they're playing New York teams. And unfortunately, I have YouTube TV, and we'll talk about that in just a second there. But they don't have the regional networks like SNY, like yes. So I just have to listen to the audio broadcast of the games. But I mean, I know it's been a lot of people just railing at this for years. When are we going to get rid of these blackouts? I mean, the NFL's gotten rid of the blackouts after all these years, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I think that's one thing Rob Manfred's trying to do. And I think that's why he's trying to have all the rights, local rights and national rights, all end around the same time so he can put them all up for bid and also say, let's get rid of all the blackouts. I mean, not only in your area, but you've got like an area in Iowa, which is claimed by five different teams, mm-hmm. the Cubs, Minnesota, everything in the Cardinals also, or Las Vegas, which is claimed by the Dodgers. It's going to be claimed by the A's eventually, but yeah. Hawaii also. You're blacked out by five different teams. Why? Why do you have that? You don't even have a team near you. But yeah. It's all about territory and just saying, hey, look, I'm going to claim them. So it's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's done. It's been done all for, I think, ever since baseball started with these ridiculous regional blackouts and national blackouts. I think Manfred has said that we're going to do something about this. The talk is cheap, but I think that it's going to finally happen. And I think it's going to benefit the fan because casual fans who just want to pick up a TV or pick up their device and just say, I want to be able to watch the Red Sox wherever I want to live, or the Yankees or the Mets or the Phillies in your case. Yeah. So I think it's going to happen. I think Rob Manfred's going to find some type of way to get the blackouts done. I know he's not the most popular guy out there, and a lot of people think he hates baseball, and I'm included in that. But if he does this, if he's able to do something on this, I think he'll bring his popularity to an all-time high. because blackouts is just something that every fan is affected by, whether you live in the East Coast, West Coast, Hawaii, or, anywhere else in the contiguous 48.
Yeah, it's crazy. Speaking of ESPN and Netflix, L. Duncan is reportedly going to Netflix. I mean, are you surprised by that?
Yeah, I am. L. Duncan is known as a personality with ESPN and also for being one of the best hosts, especially when it comes to women's basketball, when she's hosting the NCAA Women's Tournament. It's interesting for her to be to say that she's going to be the host for everything, whether it's going to be a boxing match. Netflix is hoping that she's going to be released in time for this Christmas's NFL doubleheader. May not happen, but at least in 2026, starting in 2026, she'll get to do a lot of things. And that'll also include the Women's World Cup, which Netflix has the rights to, starting in, I believe, 2031. Mm-hmm. They'll have the U.S. rights to that. So I'm sure she'll be involved in that. She'll also be involved in Major League Baseball. We mentioned the special events and whatever they have coming up. So I think it's a big move. And just to get a signature host and voice is a good move, because there have been times on boxing, I have no idea who they're who they have and who their announcers were. So I think it's a good move. And to get L. Duncan, a person who will host everything for them, all of their signature live events, I think it's a good move. And I think it's only going to help them down the line, especially if they want to get more sports rights down the road.
Yeah, there was a great chemistry there between L. and my Philly homeboy, Kevin Nagandi. I mean, who's going to be in line? I mean, I've heard, I think I've read Nicole Briscoe would be a good fit to replace L. on that 6 p.m. Sports Center.
Yeah, I think Nicole, who has done the late night sports centers and also well known for her motorsports knowledge, whether it's Formula One or NASCAR, would be a perfect fit to replace her on the NCAA tournament and the WNBA. It's probably going to be Malika Andrews. That's one person who I've heard. She hosts the NBA Today and also would be the host of the NBA studio shows when Inside the NBA isn't doing its work on ESPN. So Malika Andrews, I think, would be a perfect fit. She just signed a new contract with ESPN, so she's someone who would probably be a very good fit to replace Elle, especially on the women's basketball. But as far as the Sports Center, Nicole Briscoe would be a perfect fit, at least for me, or maybe even Kelsey Riggs, Cuff Riggs, who does a great job. Who also does some work on ACC Network too.
Yeah, I mean the Sunday. On Sunday we were watching NFL Red Zone. All of a sudden we heard for 20 minutes or so. I mean, they finally got it fixed, but it was never addressed. I mean, did anybody have an explanation as to what happened and why nobody talked about it?
It's strange. I noticed it right off the bat, and we had Awful Announcing. We were on top of it. I think it was for overall about 13 minutes. I think it started around 1:13 or 1:09 in the afternoon at Eastern time, and then went all the way to about 1:17, about 13 minutes or so. So it was a long time, and that's an eternity in television.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, they never addressed it. Scott Hansen didn't come out and say, "I'm sorry for the technical difficulties." You would expect something like that, but it was never referred to or never announced. I don't know a reason what happened for that. It was strange because NFL Network knew about it. They tried to a couple of times during that period cut into NFL Game Day Live for a couple of seconds and then went back to NFL Red Zone, only to have that hissing again. Mm-hmm. It was just really, really strange. I don't understand what happened there. And, as soon as I heard it, I went right to our Awful Announcing, our private chat. We just all went over it and said, "What is going on?" And we clipped it. And it was really strange. I just don't know why NFL media didn't even try to acknowledge or to make a statement, say, "Hey, this is what happened. We had technical difficulties," because they happen all the time in TV and radio. We understand. Just acknowledge it and apologize and move on. But it was really strange they didn't even mention it.
What do you think of this no longer 7 hours of commercial-free football, now 7 hours of red zone football?
That's awful. I mean, and especially too, you know, it used to be like whenever there was a commercial, they would cut away and then move on and get you to the next part. But I know advertising is a necessary evil in football, in television and radio. I've worked in both.
Mm-hmm.
But when you promise commercial free football, you get used to it, especially after almost 20 years of this thing with as the NFL has been very good to the fans with it. But they said, oh, we're just going to have four or five commercial ads. It's almost got to 10 or 15. And the commercial break has been almost as long as a minute now. So yeah. I'm sorry to see it. And look, you're not going to get force us to stop watching because we love our football and we love our red zone. But at least make just tell us that, hey, we're going to make a lot more commercials down the road, whether you like it or not, because we know you're going to watch. But at least don't say what's going to be 30 seconds or minuscule, because, you know, whenever you do it, it really interrupts our enjoyment of watching the game.
Especially if there's a key play coming up and then all of a sudden you have this commercial come up. And it's like, you know, it's not as fun as it used to be. Speaking of not as fun, how much are we dreading the World Cup coverage by Fox after what we witnessed with the World Cup draw on Friday?
That was horrible. That was really an abomination, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was at work, and I only have 40 minutes. And I'm thinking, well, in that 40 minutes of time, maybe it'll be Group B or Group C, but I'll be able to see something. At that time, and I love Lauryn Hill. Now, nothing wrong against Lauryn Hill, but she's on there. She's singing, and I'm not expecting that. Then there's this skit with Heidi Klum and Kevin Hart. And there was no draw. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? I'm like, who is producing this show? It was really embarrassing. Of course, they have this FIFA Peace Prize that's never been given out before.
And never will be given out again. And never will be given out again, I always
assume. Never be given out again. No, exactly. This is how not to run a draw. Look, I know you want to get people to watch, but, you know, I've never seen a World Cup draw drawn out like this. It was, I felt bad for, you know, first of all, Shaq, I don't know if he was doing a bit or not, but he was doing deadpan stuff. But Wayne Gretzky, and who we all, Ken, you and I are both hockey fans,
yep.
But I will never forgive him for not knowing how to, I'm sure there was a rehearsal for this, but he not knowing how to pronounce North Macedonia or Curacao. That's unforgivable. I mean, I don't care what you say, and you don't need to make side comments either. So that show was horrible. I do think Fox has done for the most part has covered the World Cup with reverence, except in Russia, when for some reason they forgot that Joseph Stalin owned a house and didn't mention it,
mm-hmm.
but in one of their features. But I think they'll do a pretty decent job, but. I'm interested to see the fact that now that they have hydration breaks for 3 minutes, so they basically get natural commercial breaks that we never had in soccer before. So, I think they'll be okay for game coverage, but as far as the studio coverage, that could be very embarrassing because their studio coverage in soccer has never been very strong.
Well, you know who's going to be involved in that coverage. Besides,
who Alexi Lalas?
No.
Started with him.
No. The guy who is president of the United States.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's.
I mean, that's why we don't need that. He's part of the draw front. Aren't there more important issues to worry about than being awarded the doorstop?
Well, what's interesting, Ken, I don't know if you're aware of this, but during the FIFA Club World Cup earlier this year. There was a trophy presentation to Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
He went down on the field. For some reason, he was part of the trophy lift because one of the greatest parts of the World Cup or any soccer tournament is to see the trophy lift. The team was looking at him. Why are you part of our trophy lift? And then he took the trophy and never came back with it. My fear is that he's going to the Julius Rimet trophy, which is going to be handed to the winning soccer team. He'll somehow come down in New York to be part of that trophy lift. And let's say it's given to Brazil and he takes the trophy and it's never to be seen again. So I don't know. I'm that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's probably going to be in the broadcast. They'll have him in the broadcast booth for a couple games and, you know, I don't know.
Well, he did. Dave Fox already did that once this year in the NFL, forcing him to be with Kenny Albert. Now, I'm sure, I don't know how uncomfortable he was with that. He hasn't said. But it was really painful to watch.
Yeah, I know. I agree. So anyway, Ken, I appreciate a few minutes. I hope you have a great holiday, and obviously we'll talk soon. Because we got the Olympics coming up in February.
I mean,
that's going to be a busy month, and obviously with the situation with the hockey rink there in Italy. Who knows what's going to happen with that? I mean, that's the rink is sure. It's old time hockey with like the Boston Garden or Chicago Stadium or the Autumn right. Buffalo.
Yes. but real quick, how do you not know with just 3 months to go or less than 2 months to go that rink is not up to regulation? How do you not know that? I just don't understand that, Ken. But
well, of course,
I'm sure that's a.
Of course, if you remember, they were talking about having some of the sliding events, like the luge and the bobsled in Lake Placid, because they were worried about those venues being constructed on time in Italy.
Oh, my God. This could be really, really bad. But, NBC's committed to it because they are the network of the Olympics. But it'll be interesting to see. I do hope that they figure this out. But unfortunately, the NHL has already said, the Players Association said they're not going to play if they can't sign off on it. And Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the NHL, has already said that that's not going to, they won't play either. So how do you not know within 2 months? I don't understand it. But anyway, I'll let you go, Ken. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on. Have a great holiday. And I'll speak to you in 2026.
Sounds good, Ken. I appreciate it again. Thanks again. That's Ken Fang from Waffle Announcing. I'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winners in the Daily Gazette's You Pick a Football contest in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group reporter Ted Remsnyder. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group Executive Sports Editor Will Springstead. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 14 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'Em Football Contest was Michelle Quadruple of Niskayuna with a 12-2 record. Michelle wins a $100 Price Chopper Market 32 gift card. Congratulations, Michelle. The VIP winner was Dwayne Leach of All Seasons Equipment with a 10-4 record. I went 7-7. Ugh, you Eagles stink, by the way. I went to 138-69-1, and Gazette Executive Sports Editor Will Springstead was also 7-7. He is 127-80-1. I'll announce the You Pick 'Em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick 'Em Football banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. And a friendly reminder, vaccines do not cause autism. And happy holidays to all the nurses out there. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Nick Young, Brandon Burr, Tyler Dunbar, Drew Wemple, and Ken Fang for being a part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and Blue Sky at Slapshots. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off, so my next podcast will be with Union Men's head hockey coach Josh Algy on December 31st as I approach 500 episodes of the podcast. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Gazette News Group. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Gazette News Group. I'm Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports, and happy holidays.